Hello, I'm Louisa Catherine Forsyth. This is number 0439, the Starfile program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Starfile program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0439. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Andy LaPointe, who is the author of Guide to Getting Started with Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies.
Bitcoin, if you don't understand the technology and how it actually interacts and relates to the coin itself, it may be easy to get confused on what it is and how it works. But when you really take a step back from an individual standpoint, understanding the technology and how the coins interact together, that's most important.
Susan Newman is the author of The Book of No, 365 ways to say it and mean it and stop people pleasing forever. What made her write the book?
As an adult, I realized I had no time for myself. I was cranky a lot of the time, exhausted, and I tried to figure out where is it all coming from. And I realized I was following in my mother's model of being a yes person, and she was always doing things for other people. And I said, well, wait a second, I'm not going to get anywhere if I keep doing that. And why does almost everyone have so much trouble saying no to people? For a lot of people, it's just an addiction.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter finds out from Diana Bishop what it's like to be the granddaughter of World War I flying ace Billy Bishop in Living Up to a Legend. So let's take to the skies with those Knights of the Air on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0439 was Louisa Catherine Forsyth, who is the founder of Bagacious, a lifestyle brand born out of the wish to create art with a purpose. Find out more by going to their website at bagaciousdesign.com. And you can find that link by going to our website at thestufffile.com. And thank you very much, Louisa, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, stop me if you've heard this before. Actually, don't stop me, because this is just a variation of a story that we keep seeing around here over and over and over again. A California man using a lighter to kill a huge spider in his apartment ended up causing $11,000 worth of damage when the arachnid ignited a mattress. Lindsay Weisgarver, a caregiver for a resident of the apartment in Redding, said another resident was trying to kill a massive spider with a torch lighter and succeeded in setting the pest aflame. It was a huge wolf spider, Weisgarver said. The attempt turned to disaster, however, when the flaming spider fled into a mattress, setting it on fire. Weisgarver said the flame soon spread to the apartment's drapes and a flag collection. Redding firefighters responded to the building, where residents tried unsuccessfully to extinguish the flames with a garden hose. Okay, I'm going out on a limb to assume that the flaming spider is now officially dead. Because wouldn't that be a kick in the head if the fire caused all that damage and if somehow the spider lived? Yeah. I bet they don't sing Itsy Bitsy Spider anymore to the kids in that building. Meanwhile, police in North Dakota said a shoplifting suspect was foiled when his cart, loaded with $4,000 worth of merchandise, got stuck in the snow and he dropped his wallet. Minote police said employees at the local Hobby Lobby store reported a male shoplifter around 7 p.m. Officers arrived to find the suspect's shopping cart loaded with the $4,000 worth of merchandise that had gotten stuck in the deep snow and overturned in the parking lot. The man abandoned the merchandise and fled the scene, but police said he tripped in the parking lot and dropped his wallet before making his escape. The wallet contained a photo ID belonging to 22-year-old Dustin Johnson. Police arrested Johnson at his home on felony shoplifting charges. Well, I guess he's going to have to find a new hobby now. But seriously, anybody who's ever gone shopping for even groceries in the winter knows that a shopping cart is not exactly a trustworthy escape, even to your own car in the parking lot when there is a lot of snow. I mean, that's just plain dumb. Okay, a British butcher who found himself locked inside his walk-in freezer escaped his predicament by using a frozen black pudding to strike the frozen release button. 70-year-old Chris McCabe said he was retrieving an item from the walk-in freezer at his Devon butcher shop when the wind blew the door shut behind him. The freezer was set at a temperature of minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit. McCabe said he found the emergency door release button inside the freezer had frozen solid. No one could hear me banging. Black pudding saved my life. The butcher said he used the frozen blood sausage as a battering ram to operate the frozen button. It was the right shape. I used it like the police use battering rams to break door locks in. It was solid, pointed, and I could get plenty of weight behind it, he said. I'm really lucky. We sell about two or three each week, and that was the last one in there. Well, that's a black pudding recipe you won't find anywhere else. And not many people can say black pudding saved their lives. I'm sure most likely some folks would say the opposite. Anyway, we have one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Dovey, the Shar Pei from Edmond, Oklahoma, might be just a bit jealous of the new baby at his owner's home. But in a classic passive-aggressive move, he settled on stealing pacifiers. Scott Rogers and his wife noticed that binkies were disappearing, but it wasn't until Dovey started vomiting and losing weight in early December that they tracked down the lost items. Dr. Chris Rispoli of Gentle Care Animal Hospital took x-rays of Dovey's stomach and saw what he thought were 7 to 9 pacifiers. But when Rispoli opened up Dovey to remove them, he found 21 binkies. Turns out Dovey was taking the pacifiers off the kitchen table. We've had corn cobs and socks and panties and things like that, but never 21 binkies, noted Rispoli. Okay, what I'd like to know is what the parents were thinking all that time. I mean, didn't they start to wonder where 21 pacifiers might have disappeared to? How many parents go through 2 dozen of those things? Seriously. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Many people are hearing more and more about Bitcoin, but there are a lot of folks who still don't know much about the cryptocurrency or even what cryptocurrency is. So we brought an expert on board to talk about it. Andy LaPointe is a Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain consultant. He's the author of Guide to Getting Started with Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies. He also offers a course where you can learn more about it. And he joins us on the line right now from Michigan. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Peter. Thank you very much for having me on. I look forward to being on your show.
Thanks for joining us. First of all, let's get right to the basics. I mentioned Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and I think even those with a rudimentary knowledge of what those are aware of it because it's in the news a lot. But what is blockchain?
Blockchain is basically the underlying technology of a cryptocurrency or a Bitcoin. So in essence, when you purchase a Bitcoin, that is a representation of the underlying technology or the blockchain technology underlying that coin. So when you purchase a Bitcoin, for example, other cryptocurrencies including Cardano, Ethereum, each one of those cryptocurrencies have an underlying blockchain. And each underlying blockchain has unique characteristics and abilities that other blockchains don't bring to the marketplace. So that's what makes different coins valuable, and that's what makes different blockchains able to do different things for the end user.
Now, we've been hearing about Bitcoin in the news over the last few years, but it's really kind of exploded now. Let me just state that as of the taping of this chat we're having right now, the price of Bitcoin in the U.S. is $14,511.94. That's a little over 18,000 Canadian. If you go back to 2010, a Bitcoin was worth 39 cents. So that's quite the leap in what is essentially a short period of time. I understand a little while ago, Wall Street, J.P. Morgan, Chief Executive Jamie Dimon famously said that he regrets calling Bitcoin a fraud and believes in the technology behind it, but he still doesn't change his mind when he talks about his stance about using the Bitcoin. So obviously you're somebody who knows about Bitcoin, deals in Bitcoin. What do you have to disagree with as far as Jamie Dimon is concerned?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, what's interesting is what my background is, for example, in my team that we've put together to bring our education to the marketplace is I bring 15 years of financial advisory experience to Bitcoin, for example, our Bitcoin courses. And what makes it different is, most importantly, is with that 15 years of experience as a registered investment advisor, I advise high net worth individuals, clients that had, you know, $1 million portfolio. One of my clients had about a $35 to $45 million portfolio. Over the years, we grew it to that. So from a financial aspect standpoint, Bitcoin, if you don't understand the technology and how it actually interacts and relates to the coin itself, it may be easy to get confused on what it is and how it works. But when you really take a step back from an individual standpoint, understanding the technology and how the coins interact together, that's most important. But from a financial standpoint, as you mentioned earlier from J.P. Morgan and such, what was interesting was when Jamie Dimon was making that information and those claims, there was actually employees of J.P. Morgan that were making trades in Bitcoin. So as the price was going down, there was reports on the internet that some J.P. Morgan individuals were actually making Bitcoin purchases for customers.
Actually, so, you know, one of the things is I didn't follow through on that quote because he one of the things he regretted, I mean, when he talked about it being false and didn't believe in it, he also said at the time that he would fire anybody who was dealing in it, which is one of the other
right.
parts of that statement that he said.
Right. Well, and the thing about it is what's been interesting, especially looking at it from a financial standpoint and investment advisory standpoint, which I do, is the banks and the broker-dealers, of course, you know, they want to protect their business. So when you have an unregulated asset that comes along like Bitcoin, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, as you mentioned, it was literally pennies on the dollar. And what had happened, since it's a peer-to-peer transaction, there's no centralized authority, no central bank issuing the Bitcoin, and it basically allows people like you and I and your listeners to send a digital coin, a virtual digital coin over the internet. So there's really no control over it. So it's very easy to attack. It's very easy to say it's a fraud, it's a scam, but just like the internet back in, you know, the late 90s. I was an investment advisor and able to get some IPOs, including Netscape, for some of my clients. A lot of people didn't know what the internet was at that time, but now it's very, very important to each of our lives. That's how blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies are going to be within the next 3 to 5 to 10 years.
Okay, so one of the things I'm concerned about is the explosion of the Bitcoin because of speculation. Earlier, I mentioned the story of what Bitcoin is selling for today and what it was selling for back in 2010. Another story that's out there is the story of Christoph Koch, who was doing a thesis on encryption back in 2009. He bought 5,000 Bitcoins for a whopping sum of $27. And in 2013, it was worth $886,000. Now, the fact that the price of Bitcoin is going up is only exponential to the fact that we share stories like this and people jump on board. Do you worry that what is happening with Bitcoin is similar to what was a decade ago, the dot-com bust?
To a degree, yes. Well, first and foremost, any of your listeners, of course, should not invest any more than they can lose, number one. Number two, they shouldn't take on any more risk tolerance than they can mentally take themselves, the volatility and such, and the loss of actual money. So never do that, most importantly. But number two is the internet boom and a bust, which I was going through, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of that was the technology that was driven. And if you really think about it, the companies like Amazon, Google, as well as a number of the other companies that were at the top of that boom, for example, the price did decline. Some of the companies did go out of business. But when you really think about it, those same companies is offering the cutting-edge technology today. Google, Amazon. It's the same technology they had back then, but they grew over the next 10 years or so. And that's what's going to happen with blockchain. Are there going to be some cryptocurrencies that are going to increase in value with no intrinsic value? Yes. You look at Pets.com. Pets.com, I still remember their Super Bowl ads. I think they were paying, $2 or $3 million per spot. But the point of the matter is they were still using the internet as technology. So most importantly, you bring up a great question, Peter, is as your listeners do their research on crypto, number one, don't buy on price. Just because it's a penny doesn't mean it's going to be worth $50, 3 or 4 months later, which it does happen. But most importantly, if you're listening to this, take out a pen and paper and write this down. If you're looking to invest in crypto, in research in crypto, you need to do three things. Number one, you need to research the team and the development team behind the coin. You need to find out what their experience is. What do they bring to the table? Number two, you need to read their white paper of the current cryptocurrency, because the white paper outlines not only the technology behind the cryptocurrency and the blockchain underlying that coin, but most importantly, it also gives you a roadmap going forward of what their goals and quarterly objectives are to meet the objective of that current underlying blockchain. And then number three, you need to find out what the market adaptability of that coin or blockchain is.
One of the things that some people are concerned about, you mentioned earlier that Bitcoin, cryptocurrency in general, is something that is not regulated by the government, it is not controlled by the government, it is not controlled by the banks, and it is also, as a result, drawing the criminal element. It's a way for criminals to move money around. It's a way for people to dodge taxes. Does that issue concern you? And what do you say to people who want to invest in it for legitimate reasons but are concerned about those stories they hear?
And those are some great questions. And one of the big things is one of the reasons Bitcoin actually burst into the news about 5 or 6 years ago was a company called Silk Road. And Silk Road allowed individuals at that time to purchase illicit activities, illicit drugs over the internet and pay with Bitcoin. So number one, it was already in the black market. And just like any technology that comes into the world, you do have specific group of individuals or specific industries that truthfully take that technology and move it forward. I mean, when you look at some of the industries, for example, one of the cutting-edge leading industries on any new technology, in all honesty, is the porn industry, because they were one of the first to, create the websites, create the streaming videos, to create the emails, to create anything you needed. But you are going to have some of the black market, just like you do in cash. There's no doubt about that, number one. But number two, it's a smaller and smaller component, because as more and more governments get involved, the IRS here in the United States, for taxations around the globe as well, and the individual security exchanges that you purchase Bitcoin from here in the U.S. and other countries, they are regulated by those governments. So the exchanges are regulated. So from a regulation standpoint, you are beginning to have more and more governmental insight on Bitcoin and Bitcoin exchanges.
We're just about out of time. I've got less than a minute, so I want to get people to know a little bit about your website and what you do, because I mentioned you do have courses. You have a website, bitcoinlearningcenters.com. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, and thank you very much. Yes, it's bitcoinlearningcenters.com. And what we've done is we've taken the grassroots approach to introducing individuals to Bitcoin from an experienced, authenticated course, which it takes it, you know, what is blockchain, what is Bitcoin, how to protect your Bitcoin, how to invest in Bitcoin, how to create an asset allocation portfolio using cryptocurrencies, and most importantly is how to create that portfolio and that investment into your overall investment strategy. So it takes you from a lot of the things we talked about on the phone today, Peter, is, you know, how to choose a cryptocurrency to invest in, why you want to invest, make sure it's appropriate for you, and when you do invest in that, there are some printable, downloadable guides that you can use and make sure that you are watching your crypto portfolio on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. But that is available at bitcoinlearningcenters.com.
Excellent. Andy, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Andy LaPointe, a Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and blockchain consultant. He's the author of Guide to Getting Started with Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies. He also offers a course to learn about Bitcoin. You can check out his site at bitcoinlearningcenters.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check on the show number for this program, which is show number 0439, and you'll find links to Andy's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. The best thing since sliced bread. No loafing here.
And still to come on the program, we'll learn to say no. Plus, Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Plus, much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. And right now at patreon.com, a lot of the celebrity interviews that I've had the pleasure of doing over the years are now up there as Patreon reward extras, so check those out. And speaking about interviews, you do know I have that book out still, right? Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. The book is available. It's online. You can find it in many forms, hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader such as Kindle. So check out the book and have a good time reading it, because it's a good read. Trust me, you'll enjoy it. Let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? A California man has been stripped of his gun and cited for illegally firing it off at Castle Airport. Investigators say Jim Price was shooting at squirrels from his truck on an active airfield while people were nearby, including one man who says a bullet came a little too close and he called 911. 26-year-old James Allen parked in his car just outside Castle Airport and was reading a book when he heard the shot. I heard a pop and a snap go over my head. Allen says he even heard a bullet ricochet right past him. Allen then called the police, and shortly after, multiple Merced County Sheriff's deputies arrived on scene and surrounded the truck where the shots were fired. Inside was Jim Price, Mayor Jim Price of nearby Atwater. To find out that it was the mayor shooting in the direction where people jog and have lunch and stuff like that is mind-blowing. Like, I could not believe it, said Allen. The mayor was cited for both violations on scene. His rifle was taken away, and he was ordered to give up his concealed carry permit, which was issued by the Atwater police chief. Wow. A gun-toting mayor shooting at squirrels at the airport. Seriously, what is wrong with this world? Any takers? Anyone? Bueller? Bueller? Oh, and we've got another winner here for you. A supervisor in a Tukwila, Washington office asked one of his subordinates to sign papers in connection with a performance improvement plan. Apparently, you see, Peggy Lee Robbins' work wasn't up to snuff. Well, officials say Robbins pulled her gun and pointed it at him. The supervisor ran, and Robbins, a detention agent with the Department of Homeland Security, simply sat in her cubicle. Robbins surrendered after colleagues came toward her cubicle with their own pistols drawn. She was charged with assault on a federal officer. Because assault on your boss is not a specifically defined offense, apparently. And these are the stories where the gun-toters are the sane ones in position of authority. Just think about that for a moment. Let that seep in. Yeah. Anyway, Faye Preston of Hull, Yorkshire, England, loves her neighborhood. Even the homeless folks who gently ask for change or, in Preston's case, make love in her driveway. She stepped out one night in November to smoke a cigarette and saw a couple under a blanket in her drive and decided to let them be. But when she went out the next morning, they were having actual sex on my driveway. The movement going on under the covers was unmistakable, Preston wrote in the Hull Daily Mail. Still, she was worried about running over them, so she called police, who eventually removed them. If I was homeless, I'd come here too, Preston wrote. Where else can you go for a posh meal, followed by cocktails in a swanky bar, and finish the night stepping over some frisky homeless people fornicating on your driveway? So, she's basically describing dinner and a show. Interesting neighborhood that area in Hull, Yorkshire, England must be. Interesting indeed. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 68-year-old Kathy Gilroy used to gamble regularly until she looked around at the broken-down gamblers. I said, "What am I doing here? This is so stupid," she remembers. "It dawned on me, this is not the lifestyle I want. I don't want to even associate with these people." She not only stepped away, she went on a crusade against gambling in Illinois, which she believes erodes society, takes money from the poor, and leads to addiction, bankruptcy, crime, and suicide. She's shut down several gambling operations, including VFW raffles, and fought to reject lifting the ban that blocked a gambling cafe in Villa Park. Ironically, that's the same cafe where she won $25,000 in a sweepstakes. "I called a pastor friend," Gilroy said, and I said, "Oh my God, should I send it back? What should I do? Do I donate it?" He said, "Don't feel guilty. You just got paid for your volunteer work against gambling." Gilroy thus concludes, "It's God showing me his grace and showing his grace on me." So she decided to keep the money. "It's the gambling I oppose," she said, "not the sweepstakes." Wow. Because, you know, it's not hypocrisy if you can figure out a justification for it. Wow. 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 Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Social psychologist Susan Newman is back on the program. She is the author of many books. The last time we had her on the show was when she released The Case for the Only Child. Well, her latest book is entitled The Book of No, 365 Ways to Say It and Mean It and Stop People Pleasing Forever. Dr. Newman joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good to be here.
Nice to have you back on the program once again. Glad you didn't say no, by the way.
I didn't even consider it.
Great, great. So you've written many books, about 15, 16 books now you've written?
About that.
So why this one? Was there a reason why you felt this was an important run to write now, The Book of No?
Well, all of a sudden, as an adult, I realized I had no time for myself. I was cranky a lot of times, exhausted, and I tried to figure out where is it all coming from? And I realized I was following in my mother's model of being a yes person, and she was always doing things for other people. And I said, well, wait a second, I'm not going to get anywhere if I keep doing that. And why does everybody, or almost everyone, have so much trouble saying no to people? And, they're worried when they say no. And for a lot of people, it's just an addiction.
You say they're worried. What are they worried about?
Well, when people turn other people down, they worry that they will be seen as selfish and uncaring. they're afraid that they'll be thrown out of a group if it's a, you know, you're invited to a group gathering. And so they're, you know, they've been taught to be nurturing, particularly women, to be nurturing and caring. And so the, you know, it's hard to break that mold. And so they worry there's going to be negative backlash if they say no. But in reality, they're not going to be judged. They're not going to be seen as selfish and only looking out for themselves. What normally happens is after you turn someone down, they start looking for somebody else to do whatever they want. And they're not thinking about you as much as you are worried about what they're thinking and saying about you to others.
You mentioned that women being nurturers have maybe a difficult time or more difficult time than men saying no. Are there people who are men, for instance, who have the same problem, or is it just a smaller number?
It's just a smaller number. You know, men are not typically, although I'm happy to say that's changing a little bit, are not raised to be caregivers and not raised to be available and always there for others. You know, that's been traditionally a female role and a female way that young girls are raised.
Well, for those listening to this right now, what are the signs that you're a yes person?
Well, you might get headaches. You might have trouble sleeping. But principally, you're tired, you feel stressed out, you're anxious, and you never seem to be able to get your to-do list shrunk to a manageable state. I mean, those are the typical signs. And that's very, you know, you feel frustrated. That's, you know, tends to be what happens. And you're doing more damage to yourself by saying yes all the time than you're affecting the people you're turning down. You know, as I just said, they just move on to the next person.
Does lack of familiarity breed a no person, or a yes person, I should say? And the reason why I ask that, sometimes it seems, well, I've noticed in the past, some people can say no very easily to loved ones, members of their family, but can't say no to a salesperson or someone who is virtually a stranger.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the best example of that is the contractor who says, oh, we have to knock down this wall. You'll be so happy with it. Or we have to repipe the whole house. And the reason that people tend to say yes, even to the hairstylist who says, oh, wait, you'd be much better off as a blonde, is because we tend to believe that these people are experts. And they know more than we do, and who am I to, you know, question a plumbing issue or a wall coming down? What do I know? So that's the main reason that people often have trouble with, you know, virtual strangers. And salespeople, it's hard, you know, they use high-pressure tactics, and sometimes they just wear you down.
So it sounds like in both categories of what makes a yes person, it sounds like the underlying core to it is either a lack of confidence or an inferiority complex.
I don't know. I don't think it's an inferiority complex. It's lack of confidence with the builder, yes. But with, you know, average person, it's really more this ingrained wanting to please people, wanting to make other people happy, particularly children. It's so hard for parents to say no to their kids.
Oh,
that's the real problem.
Oh, you never met my parents.
Oh, okay. Well, then they are the exception because we are now living in a culture of yes parenting, which is really harmful for kids because they grow up to feel they're entitled, or they grow up to feel that everything should be coming their way. They have less values placed on different things. And, you know, saying no to kids teaches an enormous amount of good lessons to your children.
How about in this day and age saying no to people at work? And the reason why I bring that up is there was a time before social media, before cell phones, before being able to be reached 24 hours a day, that you left the office and you went home, or you went wherever you wanted to, and your boss couldn't or wouldn't reach you because you weren't as easily reachable. Nowadays, with emails, with cell phones, sometimes it might be difficult to say no to people at work.
It's often difficult, and more so now than ever, because of that constant connection. And just in terms, in a broad, painting a broad picture about saying yes and no at work, you know, it's chic to be a workaholic, but one of the problems with that is, and agreeing to everything your colleagues ask and your boss asks, is that eventually, besides adding to your stress, it will affect your job performance. You can't do well if you're spread too thin, and your boss will notice that at some point, and your raise will not be coming. I mean, basically, in terms of the office, you want to say no to the colleague who says, will you work with me on this project, when you know that this is a guy who's not going to, or gal, who's not going to do anything. So you can soften your blow by offering minimal assistance. You may want to confer with them or advise them. And in terms of your boss, if you're on overload, you want to say to him, okay, this is what I have to do. What do you want me to drop or reshuffle the order you want these assignments done in? And that often is a very easy way to say no that's acceptable to someone you work for.
So for the person listening to this right now who realizes they may be a yes person, what's the second step they have to do to help break the cycle? Because obviously the first step is to buy your book, the Book of No.
Okay, first, I like the first step. Second step is to really accept the fact that saying no doesn't mean you're aggressive or obnoxious or controlling. That would be step number two. And you want to also get your priorities straight. You want to decide who has the first crack at you and your time. Is it your partner, your friends, your boss, your kids? And then it's very helpful to pay attention to how you're spending your time. Who's getting the most chunks of it, and that will help you sort through where you want to use your free time. And I'd also add that stop trying to do it all. A lot of us feel that we don't have any physical or emotional limits, and we can just take on more and more. So if you can figure out what your physical and emotional stopping points are, that will help you be able to say no when people go over your boundary. And I think lastly, I'd say stop being a perfectionist. You know, you say yes to things because you think you do it better than can do it better than anyone else. But you can give responsibility to other people.
The book is called The Book of No, 365 Ways to Say It and Mean It and Stop People-Pleasing Forever. Susan, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Susan Newman, author of The Book of No, 365 Ways to Say It and Mean It and Stop People-Pleasing Forever. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0439, and you'll find links to Susan's site, plus links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It probably wouldn't surprise you to hear that Harvard Law School has produced almost twice as many U.S. Supreme Court justices as any other law school. Its reputation for training brilliant lawyers is well known, so when I visited Harvard recently, I made it a point to tour its law library. Located just north of historic Harvard Yard, the library contains statues and tributes to some of its most distinguished alumni, and I was happy to see that one of them honors my favorite judge, Learned Hand. That's right, his name was Learned Hand, and what an appropriate name it was. He was a respected federal judge, and while he never served on the Supreme Court, his opinions have been quoted more often in Supreme Court opinions than those of any other lower court judge. Let's be fair, that's certainly praiseworthy, but he's my favorite judge because he once said, and I quote, "Litigation is to be dreaded beyond almost anything short of sickness or death," unquote. A smart man indeed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is, one of our favorite flyboys, Stuart Nauman. How you doing, Stu?
Oh, fine, Peter. Curse you, Red Barrett. Oh, that's Snoopy.
Yeah, that's Snoopy. Yeah. Different flyer altogether.
Yeah, well, you know what? I couldn't fly a doghouse. He could.
That's
true.
I think
it was a sop with camel.
Yeah.
But, speaking of flying aces, on this edition of Book Banter, we're looking at a flying ace. A very famous one, a Canadian at that, because it's not always easy to live under the shadow of a famous relative, especially one who has a historic legendary status attached to them. Just as former CBC, CTV, Global News reporter Diana Bishop. Her famous grandfather is the late Billy Bishop, the Canadian World War I Air Force pilot and flying ace who shot down 72 German planes and was also best known for his solo raid against a German aerodrome in 1917 that earned him the highly coveted Victoria Cross Medal. Now, to a degree, Diana had some pressure to live up to the Bishop name and the legacy her famous grandfather established exactly a century ago. However, that legacy fell more heavily on the shoulders of her father, Arthur Bishop. A fighter pilot in his own right during World War II with the RCAF, Arthur Bishop happily preserved the heroic legacy of Billy Bishop by writing numerous books and reliving that legacy in countless personal appearances and speeches he delivered at military and aviation events. And now Diana, who has made a career telling other people's stories on three television networks and their newscasts, tells her own story of what it was like to grow up with the same family name and blood ties with one of Canada's greatest war heroes in her memoir, Living Up to a Legend. Now, in her book, which effectively doubles as a rather cathartic confessional, Diana recounts the story of both her father and grandfather, how one built an extraordinary heroic reputation as a result of his actions in the skies over war-torn Europe, and how the other tried to echo that reputation nearly 30 years later, but to a rather lesser degree. So she chronicles the life of Billy Bishop as a man who showed exemplary bravery as a fighter pilot who faced increasing danger with every dogfight he engaged in against the nascent German Air Force. And although he married into a wealthy family, his bride Margaret was a member of the Eaton family, the department store Eaton family, he didn't exactly get the chance to enjoy the instant monetary wealth that marrying into a wealthy family can bring. However, up until his untimely death in Florida in 1956, Billy Bishop enjoyed his celebrity, especially serving with the RCAF during World War II, and even as a technical consultant for the 1942 Warner Brothers war flick, Captains of the Clouds, which starred James Cagney. Also, Diana has this unenviable task of having to live under Billy Bishop's shadow, first with the commercial success of the play Billy Bishop Goes to War, which helped to elevate his already legendary status, and then with the release of the NFB documentary by Paul Cowan called The Kid Who Couldn't Miss, which was basically a scathing critique of Billy Bishop and his wartime record, and alleged that he lied about his war record, especially the number of German planes he shot down. She later responded to those charges after she joined Global with a documentary she put together called A Hero to Me, which refuted the allegations that were put forward in Cowan's documentary about Billy Bishop. And you know what? She's written a complete family memoir in Living Up to a Legend and has succeeded tremendously in telling the story of three generations of a family and how they dealt with one member's enormous contribution to Canadian history. It's written with a great deal of honesty, journalistic integrity, admiration, pain, and poignancy. And if Diana Bishop has proven anything with this book, is that having a family member who is historically famous can be a burden, but with a great deal of personal reconciliation and acceptance, it can be something to be proud of and not ashamed and faced with as much courage as Billy Bishop did a century ago.
So she can look back at her family tree on both sides. You know, on one side, she's soaring high into the sky as a war hero, and on the other side, you know, dive bombing into the depths of bankruptcy with a major department store chain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And also, like I said, being also a victim of revisionist history as well.
Exactly. And the book is?
It's called Living Up to a Legend by Diana Bishop. And I worked with her. She's a very nice lady. It was published by Dundurn Press, and it's $24.99.
And in that genre, what else do you recommend?
Well, I'm going to recommend the two books that are mentioned throughout Diana's book. One was Billy Bishop's memoir that he wrote after World War I called Winged Warfare. And her father Arthur Bishop's book about her grandfather Billy Bishop called Courage of the Early Morning, which are both available in paperback. So it's still readily available.
Is her father still alive? Do you know?
No, he died about 25 years ago.
Okay. So again, the book is?
It's called Living Up to a Legend by Diana Bishop. It's published by Dundurn Press. And it's $24.99 in trade paperback.
And where can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, not, up in the wild blue yonder, you know, flying high into the clouds. No. You can find me every week in the Montreal Times. That's where. In print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Excellent, sir. Thank you very much once again.
Yeah, well, thank you, Peter. And now, contact.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just in the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you right here, right now, on a program that is also available on Patreon.com. So join, because you know this is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. So join us and help make this a bigger and better radio experience through Patreon.com. Thank you for your support. A 911 operator in La Crosse, Wisconsin, received a call from a man who said he was locked out of a building and he was lost, or that rather he had lost some money inside. He said if police didn't respond to help, he would break into the building to retrieve his property. But the man could not explain how his property was inside the business in the first place. It was close to the weekend and he did not work there. By the time officers arrived, the man had thought better of his plan and fled. On Monday, police got another call from an employee at the business who said his laptop had been stolen. The responding officer found some interesting evidence, including condoms, some loose change, and probation paperwork for Randy Ballstad, who did not work there. Ballstad was sentenced to probation in a robbery case a month before and was found nearby on a university campus without any shoes on, and questioned for the burglary at the business. His reply, "I choose death." Okay, well, you know, that wasn't an option, Randy. And certainly neither was liberty. But if you want that choice to be available to you, I'm sure accommodations could be made. Ooh. Anyway, when Adrian Pierce was 17 years old, his girlfriend in Don Mills, Ontario, gave him a Christmas gift and then broke up with him. "I had a long walk home, and I was all upset and angry and all the things you feel when somebody breaks up with you," remembers Pierce, who is now 64 years old and lives in Edmonton, Alberta. He has kept the gift, still wrapped in shiny blue paper, refusing to open it. On the other hand, he refuses to get rid of it. He used to put it under the tree every year, confusing his children and angering his wife, who finally banned the girl's gift from the family's tree. Now, this year, he tried to call Vicky, that's his old girlfriend from decades before. "I was almost shaking, I was so nervous," Pierce said, "but it was the wrong woman." He reached a 91-year-old by the same name who had never lived in Ontario. "I kept it initially because I guess I had hopes that we would get back together," Pierce said. "Now it's just become something of a bit of a habit after 47 years of looking at it and having the pleasure of not opening it." Gee, now I'm curious to know what's inside that box. Wouldn't it be ironic if the only thing inside was a note saying the breakup was just a joke? Wow. And what about that line about keeping it where he said that "I guess I had hopes that we would get back together again"? I mean, has his wife heard that answer? I'm surprised she hasn't beat him around the head with the box covered in the shiny blue paper yet. Oh, while we're on the topic of potentially failed relationships, let's look at another one that probably is a lot more recent than the last one we just discussed. So, the girlfriend you've had since high school is a stripper, but you don't like her chosen profession. What to do? Oh, what to do? I know. How about setting the strip club on fire? A West Virginia man was arrested for setting an early morning blaze at JB's Gentleman's Club in Huntington, West Virginia. 21-year-old Creo Chance Bishop faces second-degree arson charges after authorities say he set the exterior of the strip club where his girlfriend worked on fire at 3:30 a.m. on December 13th. According to Jim Reed, the manager of the strip club, he said, "It's stupid. She's trying to make a living for herself. He's not doing nothing. She's paying the bills, from what I understand." Bishop fled the crime scene on foot, making it as far as a Walmart parking lot across the street from the strip club before Cable County Sheriff's Department deputies detained him. The person who called authorities to report the fire said a man in the Walmart parking lot had called out to him saying that the man should leave the fire alone and mind his own business. When deputies found Bishop, he was carrying a black trash bag. After questioning, Bishop admitted to authorities that he set the blaze because he was tired of his girlfriend working there. Bishop was taken to Western Regional Jail and booked. No one was injured in the blaze. The owner of the strip club estimated the damage to be at about $1,000. But the girlfriend's job prospects took a hit. Though she'd worked there for 6 months, the owner said he couldn't afford to keep her on staff if Bishop gets out of jail. "I hate doing it, but I got to protect my business," Reed said. "He might do this again. It might be worse next time." Sheriff Chuck Zirkel said that surveillance video helped identify Bishop as the one who set the blaze. So, I guess that means the boyfriend kind of got his way. Assuming, of course, they're still a couple. Gee, do you think she'll wait for him? Only time will tell. Only time will tell. I mean, if a guy can be married and keep a gift from a girlfriend from when he was 17 years old and he's now in his 60s, maybe this one will wait for her arsonist boyfriend. Love is often blind. Yeah. Anyway, Florida's Walt Disney World has announced it is updating its security policy at its resort hotels. What that means? It is removing the Do Not Disturb sign from every room and requiring that an employee enter every room in the hotel at least daily. Disney says this will ensure the safety and security of the guests and its properties. "At what point do you not have a door anymore?" asked one perplexed guest. Well, they just can't get all the way there in one step, can they? I'm sure they'll get rid of the door eventually. Anyway, boys and girls, we've reached that moment of the show. You know what it is. Yes, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man suspected of stealing from a bank was arrested by the Cottonwood Police Department in Arizona during what he thought was an interview for a police dispatcher job. 32-year-old Alberto Saavedra Lopez had been sought since October 2016 when Bank of America filed a theft report. Bank officials suspected Lopez, a former employee, stole about $5,000 between July and September of that year from the bank. Lopez moved to Phoenix and kept missing appointments with investigators and refusing to answer their phone calls. A warrant for his arrest was issued by the Yavapai County Attorney's Office, but Lopez avoided contact with law enforcement officials for another year. In December, Lopez applied for a job opening as a dispatcher with the Cottonwood Police Department. During a background check, the warrant came to light and officers scheduled an interview at the Cottonwood Police Department on January 4th. When Lopez arrived for his interview, Cottonwood police officers placed him under arrest in connection with the bank theft. Cottonwood Police, in the release, added Lopez was out of the running for employment with the police department. Well, now you have to ask the question, why? Oh, why? If you knew there was a warrant out for your arrest out there somewhere, that you would apply for a job with a police department? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0439. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0439. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, go ahead, try and figure that out.